It's time to take a look beyond the headlines with Peter Dykstra. Peter is an editor with Environmental Health News. That's EHN.org and DailyClimate.org. On the line now from Atlanta, Georgia. Hi there, Peter. What's going on?
Hi, Steve. Ready for a little good news amidst all the bad news we always seem to have on this beat?
Oh, you better believe it. What do you got for us today?
A little story from my alma mater, CNN.com, about how Costa Rica regrew its lost forest. Costa Rica, like just about any nation in the tropics, saw heavy-duty logging. In this case, it began in Costa Rica after World War II, continued into the 1970s, by which time Costa Rica had lost half its forests. But in the 1980s, Oscar Arias, who later won the Nobel Peace Prize, took over as president. And under Arias, Costa Rica began an aggressive campaign to cast itself as eco-minded. They reversed the damage, supplanting the lost income of logging with income from ecotourism.
So how exactly did they do this?
They did this by showing landowners that the logging money was a one-time benefit, whereas ecotourism dollars would come back year after year after year. And also on federally owned lands, Costa Rica became one of the best creators and managers of national parks, both along its beautiful beaches and inland in the rainforests. And the forests have bounced back spectacularly.
So, Peter, to what extent could other countries around the world emulate what Costa Rica has done?
I think other countries have to emulate the stopping of logging of their forests. They won't all see the same benefit from ecotourism because that dollar can't be sliced 100 different ways, but they will certainly get the benefit of seeing their land not turn to almost nothing when grazing land is exhausted and the trees can't grow back quickly either.
And not to mention the benefit for climate stability as well. Hey, what else do you have for us today?
A story from California that may also be good news. It involves regulation, which some people hate, but the potentially regulated don't seem to mind. Uber and Lyft, growing in popularity, showing signs that they're not just a passing fad, they're here to stay, but they're also largely unregulated in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. Only 1% of California's vehicles for hire are estimated to be electric vehicles. California wants them to be 2/3 almost of their rides from electronic vehicles in only a decade by the year 2030.
So how's this going to happen? As I understand it, if you drive for Lyft or Uber, you have to buy your own car.
You have to buy your own car, or in some cases, rent your own car. Some Uber and Lyft drivers are using rentals. They find that more cost effective, but they're hoping that in 10 years, there will be enough of a market and enough profitability in electric vehicles. Lyft has already endorsed the idea. Uber says they're open to further discussions.
Okay, Peter, it's time for us to take a look back in history. What do you see?
It's a monumental 30th anniversary. August 1st, 1990 was the day that McDonald's, the world's largest purveyor of fast food, and the Environmental Defense Fund came to an agreement that, among other things, would drop polystyrene packaging, those legendary clamshell boxes for burgers, from their menu. And it was a major breakthrough, but McDonald's didn't completely drop all of their polystyrene styrofoam packaging until the year 2018.
So is this greenwashing, Peter? Was this more for optics, or what practical effect has it had on pollution from this?
Well, can it be both? I mean, on one hand, you've got all this packaging. McDonald's legitimately reduced its waste stream to landfills. They legitimately used a better form of packaging, but it's not like they ended taking some of that rainforest beef with its own baggage on greenhouse gas emissions and serving it up as billions and billions of burgers every year.
So what role did consumers play in this? You mentioned the Environmental Defense Fund, but what about people in the public?
EDF, Environmental Defense Fund, were the reasonable guys that came to the table with McDonald's. But as much as 3 years earlier, there was a grassroots campaign. Activists like Lois Gibbs, the legendary Hellraiser from the Love Canal neighborhood, who launched something called the McToxics campaign 3 years earlier in 1987 to pressure McDonald's to change its packaging. One can safely say that 3 years worth of grassroots hell-raising sort of soften the market for EDF to come in and make the score and make the change with McDonald's.
Well, thanks, Peter. Peter Dykstra is an editor with Environmental Health News. That's EHN.org and DailyClimate.org. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, Steve. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
And there's more in these stories at the Living on Earth website. That's loe.org.